into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Really good win for Burnley already today. 2-1 winners against Wolves. Second half just getting underway at Stamford Bridge. Meanwhile, it's Chelsea 1, West Ham 0. Thiago Silva with the goal on 10 minutes. There is much from the weekend to discuss. We're going to do it with Pat Nevin.
Space for Fernandes, 25 yards out. Thought about taking the shot, lays it off for McTominay, who drills it into the back of the net. What a start for Manchester United. Scott McTominay's first Premier League goal of the season. 70 seconds gone. It's Manchester United 1, Leeds United 0. Here we come again. Chance for McTominay. Oh, he's made it 2. 2 goals for Scott McTominay inside the opening 3 minutes. Well, it comes to Martial. Little touch out to Fernandes. Drill shot in. 3-0 to Manchester United. And Bruno Fernandes is out of the third inside 20 minutes. Goes corner, headed down by Rashford and then tapped in by Victor Lindelof. It's Manchester United 4, Leeds United 0, 36 minutes gone. Drills it in low to Daniel James, whose first touch is brilliant. There for Daniel James, and he scores a fifth goal for Manchester United. Scintillating counter-attacking move, one end of the pitch to the other. This time McTominay was the creator. That was glorious football from United, and they lead Leeds by 5-1.
Up he steps, right-footed. Fernandes, the little hop, skipping a jump, but he sides. Puts it into the bottom right-hand corner. It's 2 for Bruno Fernandes. It's 6 for Manchester United.
Well, there we are. Quite a few games with lots of goals. Pat Nevin, good evening. Hello.
How are you doing, Joe? Are you well?
Very well. How will you spend Christmas this year? Obviously strange times. Is it a very limited select group in the Nevin household?
There's three of us. My wife, me and my son. My daughter can't go back. She's a doctor up in Glasgow area, so she'll not be coming back, but you know, you've got to put up with it. You go by the rules. There's a few jokes going around here that Nicola Sturgeon's going to put some tanks on the border to make sure no one goes south of the border, and considering I live 10 miles from the border. But no, it's very serious stuff, and you know, unless it's a real good reason or work, etc., you basically stay put, and that's what we're going to do.
Well, we're watching plane after plane from the south of England arrive into Belfast and beyond up north at the moment. So this new strain, it feels, is only a matter of time away. It may well have landed. I haven't heard the news in the last couple of hours. What about you? Scotland, have you managed to avoid this new strain? I mean, you suspect it's quite possibly everywhere anyway. What's the general situation in Scotland?
Glasgow had it bad, and the surrounds of the main west of Scotland had it bad. East of Scotland wasn't so badly hit. I live in the Borders, which is rural, and it's hardly been touched. Mm. But like everyone else, we know the virus doesn't care. And it will probably permeate absolutely everywhere. I think what everybody realises, the built-up areas get it worse, you know, and you have to take into consideration the population, the demographics and all that as well as everything else. So kind of lucky. We've been fortunate where we live so far. And all the way, I mean, for the entire 9-10 months, whatever it is yet so far. But you know, everybody knows it's, you know, just a matter of time before people get it. And just the hope is that matter of time is enough time for the virus, the vaccine. Mm. And it's a race against time, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. Well, hopefully we get there very soon. We heard their commentary from Nathan yesterday at Old Trafford. Manchester United beat Leeds by 6-2. Leeds, the perfect opponent for Manchester United, was the general consensus here. You know, one-on-one, lots of space with the players United have, they can live with that.
There are certain teams that play against Leeds United who will score lots of goals because of the way they play. Was it 4 Liverpool got it at the start of the season? Chelsea managed to get a good few past them as well. If you're an open team that has got real good pace, that can break into areas, you will do well against Leeds United. Even when those first two goals went in by McTominay, I just thought, we were chatting with my wife and I was sitting watching it, and she said, well, that's incredible. And I went, nah, this will end up 5-3. Well, I was wrong, it was 6-2. But it just, right from the moment it started, it's brilliant watching Leeds. You just, I mean, honestly, you just love it. But, and I just don't know how long the Leeds fans will enjoy it before they get a bit fed up with it. Because, I mean, how much can you put up with losing that amount of goals? And yes, it's open. Yes, it's Bielsa's way. But also, if it wasn't Bielsa, the word naivety would be thrown about all over the place as soon as his team plays. Because you can see a mile away what's wrong is the wrong word. What is different about Leeds. And that amount of openness, particularly against certain teams, particularly against Manchester United, the way they play, it seems suicidal, you know. But hey, sitting there smiling away, because at the moment Leeds are, they're not in a bad position. It's at 17 points so far, it's okay. But if they start dropping down and, you know, get in towards a relegation area, you'll see the attitude slightly change. But for Man United, it's brilliant. But hey, take nothing away for United. We had this conversation the other week there, and a lot of people were asking for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's head. And I'm saying to him, I think he'll at least last to the end of the season, purely because the league form's fine. The league form is absolutely okay, you know, and where they are in the league just now, you know, tucked in nicely in there in third place. They're not, no, they're not absolutely brilliant, but in the end, kind of who is all the time? I mean, take away even Liverpool's 7-0 win there. They've been all right, you know, they've been quite good, but, you know, is it five of their games? So far, they've failed to win this season, which sounds incredible for Liverpool. So it's a different season. It's a weird season. It's, you're seeing odd and strange things. If you're in the business of being a pundit, I would err on the side of not saying sack anyone too quickly, because 2 weeks later they could be in the top four.
Yeah, very volatile. And does the hard-nosed pro that you are sometimes raise an eyebrow at the way in which Bielsa is so lauded and celebrated, and that the word naive is not thrown at him all that much?
Yeah, if I was a wee bit more hard-nosed pro, yeah. But sadly, I'm not most of the time. Look, and realistically, you know, if you're thinking of a team that's going to go and win things, it's not, they're not going to be able to do it like that in a league like the Premier League. But, I mean, part of football is entertainment. The thing is marrying the two. That's been the problem. When you watch Pep Guardiola, and for a while there, they married the two really quite well. But it's very, very hard to marry the two. We get a level of, not even necessarily good defending, just enough attacking, enough of the ball. What Bielsa's team don't do, which Pep's team do, and Pep will tell you all day long how much he admires Bielsa, but Pep's team keep the ball. So you don't need to put up that many, you know, breaks and teams getting them behind you all the time, because you've got the ball, you don't give it away that often. Bielsa's teams do, and he leaves himself really, really, you know, wide open at the back. When I was watching the other day, many years ago, we used to play against Spurs. They weren't exactly like that, but they were not unlike it. Every game was tight and closed, you know, and you watch a game of football at any level, and there's 20 players all in this wee box of about 40 yards by 40 yards. And, you know, that's just the way it goes. And I used to play against Spurs years ago, and the game was the 18-yard line to 18-yard line. It was like an elongated five-a-side game. Millions of space and a joy to play in for creative players. Well, that's exactly what Bielsa's team does. You start the game and you think, okay, is that, that's the rules, is it? And there's certain teams that will like it and certain teams that will love it. There's very few that will hate it, to be honest. Most will actually enjoy playing against it. Mm. And when you come right down it, do you want to be a team that people love playing against? Generally, that's not a good thing. But I have to say, I'd love to play not only against Leeds United, but actually for them too. It's a weird scenario. It's a weird, weird scenario. But see, when you come down here, I don't know, I'll ask you as well. I really like them. I really, really like them. Mm. And if they were playing, I'd go and see them. Mm. And there's got to be something in that, surely.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it's, you know, largely effective, certainly effective enough to have a promoted team pretty much even at this stage in the season safe in most people's eyes. So it's not like it's kamikaze stuff either. You know, there is an aspect to it which works brilliantly, as Newcastle found out during the week. So there is a method to it. So like the interesting thing from a Manchester United point of view, and Solskjaer has to do a lot to get credit, I think, in the main, if they had lost to Mayo yesterday, he would have been outsmarted by Bielsa. But nobody is really saying he outsmarted Bielsa this morning. It's not the way the cookie crumbles for Ole at the moment. But in his post-match interview, he said, and he said, you know, really succinctly, which maybe is good management. I mean, if you were a player in his team, you would know what he was looking for. He said, look, you're playing Leeds. You've got to run. You've got to match them for effort and physicality. You have to run away from the runners that are, you know, marking you. And then you need 1-2s to beat the press. And he said that post-match, and I thought, that's kind of, yeah, that landed with his players. That's pretty much what they did. And they ran 3 kilometres more than their previous 6 games, which is not outrageous, but it's something. The stat that jumped out was sprints. In their previous, each of their previous 6 matches, 130 sprints per game. And against Leeds, 205 sprints per game. You know, none more than Scotland's finest bursting through for his goals. And I thought, you know, in fairness to Solskjaer, there was a clarity about that. And there was obviously an excellent execution. And everyone's talking about Bielsa, and don't we love Leeds?
Now, the bad news, if you can hear me,
you can't hear me.
Oh, I can now. Okay. Sorry.
Did you lose that whole question?
No, I've got the end. I've got most of it there.
Okay. And the point was, like, Solskjaer, in fairness, did a very good job here, you would have to say. Clarity, succinct, and executed brilliantly. And it's all about how great Leeds are.
The odd thing is, you don't actually usually give away all your hints and all your ideas and your stratagems after a game, because you're going to play them again. Mm. So don't give that away generally. It's an odd thing to do, but he gave it away really very, very clearly. Now, that kind of raised an eyebrow for me. But in a way, it's the one team you can give it away against, because you know they ain't changing next time. They're going to do the same next time. It doesn't matter if you play that system. They won't suddenly go, oh, we'll adapt it, because that's not what Bielsa does. The sprints thing's dead interesting because, again, back to the first time I've seen them this season, you know, against Fulham, I was absolutely staggered by, you know, people say sprints, you should be sprinting all the time, etc. But when Leeds United broke, it's honestly, it's like a 100-metre dash for about 8 players, all hammering towards that box. So you better sprint, because if you don't sprint, you won't catch them, because they're sprinting. They're doing it all the time. So you're right, he said it to his players, and he said, look, get this in your head. This is going to be, you're going to be working here. Very noticeable, once again, Mr. Pogba wasn't playing in that game, because he's not your man for sprinting. back and forward. He lollops around a lot of the time. That's not what you needed. You needed McTominay. You needed somebody who's willing to go and graft to that level. And McTominay's, so for all the stuff you say about Solskjaer, and I'm not telling you he's a genius or anything like that, but he's noticed the things that need to be done. He's noticed what he's needed for that specific game. And you've got, you know, a young Scotland player who played incredibly well in front of in front of Pogba, who's supposed to be one of the best players in the world. Now, that's actually a fairly big call, but it's absolutely the right call. And in that game, it was massively the right call. So, again, you know, it's not that I back up everybody who's going through a tough time. You don't, because, you know, sometimes they kind of deserve it, and it is naivety or stupidity or something like that. But Solskjaer, I mean, when he's had to make certain decisions after there have been poorer decisions made, a lot of the time he comes up with the goods, and he's come up with the goods again. I quite like the way Manchester, in fact, I really like the way Manchester United play. And the best thing on top of it, all those things you talked about, all the technical things you talked about, spirit looks superb. I thought the spirit was brilliant. And that's the thing, you know, maybe, I mean, I really like Martial as a footballer, but sometimes you see him walking about and, you know, you think, well, come on, join the gang, eh? And Pogba, come on, join the gang, would you? We need all of us here. You look to that team at the weekend and, everybody was in the gang and they were all working hard and they were all doing those sprints together.
Well, as you say, if they win their game in hand, they're in a very nice position. They're 2 points off Liverpool, and people are now uttering the phrase, are they the best of the rest? We'll see. The problem everyone has at the moment is Liverpool are quite clearly the best. Watching the quality of the goals against Crystal Palace, I did find myself thinking, football is just so good. Like, the quality on show from so many players is it's of just such a standard. When I first started watching football as a kid in the 90s, I mean, any number of these goals would, like, live in the memory for like a decade in the 90s, and now they're all just like commonplace. I mean, I don't know what your favourite of the Minamino, Mane, Firmino's one where Robertson played it into him, Henderson's goal, Firmino again was a brilliant goal. Salah comes on. One was a reaction, but then the one into the top corner. Like, it's just an outrageous standard.
We get used to that Salah goal because he scored it so often. But it was brilliant. And it makes it look sickeningly easy. And I remember used to go and watch, in the early days, Dalglish used to play for Celtic before he went to Liverpool. And he used to score that all the time. He used to score it with his bad foot all the time. He used to score with his left foot all the time, as well as pinging it in, curl it in the top corner with his right foot. The one thing I would say, and you're right, the quality of goals was phenomenal there in that particular game, and has been quite a lot of the games. A lot of the time in those pitches, you couldn't have done that. You're wasting your time to try and play those ping, 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 ping passes, because it's going to bobble and you're not going to be able to do it. But it's making sure that you get a team and a group that can actually work with the circumstances they've got. There were moments there that were great. And it just shows the madness of all that. Because you compare that to Aston Villa versus Liverpool at the start of the season. And there were some great goals there as well. Thing is, we're against Liverpool. And it's trying to make these decisions on one game or two games. You've got to look over the entire piece. And I have to be absolutely honest about it. There's been long periods where Liverpool have been quite average this season. But then again, you could actually have said that periods in other seasons, but they still managed to get the wins, and they're doing that again. At the moment, you know, looking at Manchester City, looking at the best of the rest, you're right. It is the rest at the moment. They haven't lost it. And the big question was always going to be what happens when Van Dijk's gone out. He's gone out. They're still top of the league. So I don't think there's an argument anymore. They are the best team, and they are the standard everyone has to look at. And they don't, at the moment, look as if they're going to stumble that far. That for somebody to overtake them now, they're going to have to put an incredible run together. And the way this league's going just now, can you see anybody putting that sort of run together? I find it difficult to see anyone capable of doing it.
It's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine. And it was Matip and Fabinho on the centre of defence, if people didn't catch the game. Keita, Henderson, Wijnaldum. And Mane, who sulked beautifully coming off. I mean, it was just a thing to behold. It was great. And sulked for the rest of the match as well. Firmino, Minamino, Salah was off the bench. I suppose you would have to say Liverpool have really stamped their authority on proceedings this week. I mean, we haven't spoke to you since the game at Anfield against Spurs midweek. That felt significant, didn't it? That felt like, not that they've cleared the final hurdle, but they're definitely over a tricky enough fence, and they've come around Amen Corner maybe at the Masters. There's some sporting analogy that's perfect for what they've done, but that felt like a real right back in your box Spurs moment.
Well, yes, because you know Spurs actually now for that little period, because we see it, we've said it at the moment about Man United, we've actually said it about Chelsea as well. We've said it about a number of teams. Yeah, you are the best, so they have to go and play against them. And against, you know, Spurs, the team that they are, you'd almost think, suited, absolutely suited, you know, to play against Liverpool because of the way they play. But they managed to control it. And they managed to control it in the right way. And, of course, doing what Liverpool do and scoring when they did, sometimes it's important when you score as well. And the time they score the winner is phenomenal for them as well. And, yeah, it was a massive one to overcome. You can imagine the league table just now. Yeah, it's always ifs and buts, but we're going to have a wee quick look. The league table just now, had it not been for that, you know, Liverpool would be back on 28 points, as would Spurs. So that's the madness of this.
And I wonder, would Spurs have lost to Leicester? You know, whatever the psychology is at play, but you suspect at home they would have been buoyed as opposed to, ugh.
That makes an argument against what both of us are saying, that Liverpool are that far ahead. But the point is, they tend to do it when they absolutely need to do it, where there are slips from everyone else. Whereas Liverpool, you know, you have to get our heads around it again. I'm saying it, I've seen them have better times and better seasons. They've lost one game in 14 so far. Yeah, that's all right. That's good enough. That's absolutely fine to do that, to lose one game in 14. When in actual fact, you know, you start the season, you lose that game to the Villa one, you think, wow. And then you think, that's freakish. And I think we used the word freakish at the time. And yes, that is freakish. And you get freaks and you don't make any decisions on freaks.
So pretend for a second you're Jurgen Klopp and you're flicking through the Spanish media and you see, oh, two-page spread, Mo Salah has been talking. I think Madrid and Barcelona are two top clubs. Who knows what will happen in the future? Right now I'm focused on winning the Premier League with Liverpool. How long will I stay at Liverpool? That's a tough question. But right now I can say that everything is in the hands of the club. Of course I want to break records here, and I repeat all the club records, but everything is in the hands of the club. And then his former teammate, the legendary Egyptian footballer Mohamed Aboutrika, he was on beIN Sports, and it would seem Mo Salah's not happy he wasn't given the captaincy against Midtjylland. It was given to Trent Alexander-Arnold instead. There were a bunch of injuries. So he was saying, I called Mo about his situation at Liverpool. He's upset. That would never affect his performance on the field. I know Salah is not happy in Liverpool. He told me the reasons why he's not happy, but they are secrets and I can't talk about it in public. One of the reasons that made Salah angry was that he was not the captain against Midtjylland. I mean, for a start, grow up, Mo. You know, seriously, grow up. Captaincy. So I'm hoping there's something more serious going on here. That's a lot of smoke, Pat.
The captaincy one's odd. I can remember the first time I was made captain of a team. John Aldridge was injured, trying to, and the manager made me captain, and I went, "Eh, what me? Why? Because I'm old, you know." And it's like, you can do without it, you know. And anyway, I think the captaincy is an overrated thing. It's just something that's it's a name, it's a kind of stripe in your arm, but everybody should be, you know, taking on board what they can take on board. So that's it's a bit of a shock, that. And considering how rarely Mo Salah actually speaks and says anything that's of particular note other than being very, very nice, it's a real surprise that this has come out like this. If I'm going to be ultra cynical, my first would be with any other player. And, you know, Mo's nice and different and all that sort of thing. But my first question in anything like that comes up is, oh, you've got a new contract deal coming up, have you?
I was checking that. His contract runs out in 2023. So unless he's agitating for an extension early doors and trying to maximise, you know, whatever age he is now and whatever value he has now, because he did say it's in the hands of the club a few times, but he's certainly not out of the out of his contract at the end of this season or next.
Well, or next, but you know where it actually works now. Because of Bosman and all that's happening with Bosman, it's not 2023, it's the year before that. It's 2022. That's when it's really kind of ran out, right? So, right, we're going into 2021 now. Actually, that's the time to think about it. So that actually makes perfect sense to me. That's when agents will start thinking about it and start talking about running down contracts, etc. So, you know, it'd be sad if, you know, that any player, I don't like it when any player does it, but particularly Mo, because I'm sure he's not underpaid, you know, to start pushing that. But the way of the world, people have got agents, maybe that's the way it works. It just seems odd. If there was anything else, it's hard to see what it is, because he's played all the time. You know, he's a lot of the players played through him. If you're a footballer, that's in the purest sense, that's what you want. He's getting enough of the ball. He's not being asked to overwork, as in when he's needing a rest, he's given a rest. Or sometimes he doesn't even seem to want it, but he's given it. On top of that, as I say, he gets plenty of the ball. Plenty of the ball's played through him. They adapt his position now and again and play through him more centrally. You know, everything in a footballing sense seems to be drawn up for him. So you start immediately looking away from the football and says, is the nose out of joint for anyone else being, you know, getting the nod above him? Well, no, not really. I don't think so. The only thing that then gets in your mind is he found out somebody else is on a hell of a lot more than him. And again, that sounds awfully cynical, but that would be sad if that was the case. And if someone is in massively more than him and he starts rocking the boat, he'll be getting it. Don't worry about that. He'll be getting it.
Yeah, I would have thought so. That all makes perfect sense. I mean, I get the Real Madrid-Barcelona lure. You know, I understand that. They're so iconic. They're obviously not in good places, neither of them right now. And there have been plenty of players, be it a Hazard or who else went from Liverpool a couple of years ago? A Coutinho. You know, you move to these clubs, you can lose your rhythm, you can find yourself out of favour with fans, you can, like, they're not risk-free, these moves. There's no guarantee that Salah will just suddenly hit the ground running over there. And I don't know, it's not like Liverpool are finishing second or third every year and getting knocked out in the quarterfinals of Champions League. Like, as you said, it's all there for him, you know? It's just, the Barcelona-Madrid thing still seems to have a cachet.
The first thing I would say, there isn't a player of that ilk and of that level who doesn't think, I can go there and I can make it better. Mm. I can get them back to where they are. Every player of that level feels they can do it. And kind of rightly so, they are of that level. You know, and if they can't change it, they'll then blame the fact that they didn't have enough good players around them. But of that level and that ilk, they think they can actually bring those very top clubs. it's an interesting time because I think everybody knows, I mean, Real Madrid and Barca not being the powers that they've had, they have been, but they probably will be again at some point. The moment it's going to be slightly difficult for them because of the difficulties they've got with the COVID and with the monies that they're trying to get in, but in time they will get it. And it's, you know, a lot of the time with transfers and, you know, you people who have got massive careers, they want all the awards, they want all the notoriety, they want the fame, and they also want, you know, history that they can, you know, look back in 20 years and they're still talked about as one of the great players on the planet playing for the great clubs. So, yeah, there's still possibly something there that is there for Mo Salah. But you're right, the chances that, you know, could go wrong, it's just as likely. It absolutely is just as likely. Some people fall in the right place. Now, remember, Salah was at Chelsea and couldn't get a game. He wasn't the player he became. But after that, you know, he did well-ish. But even when he came to Liverpool, no way in the world did anyone think he would do what he's doing now to this level. I don't know, and I don't think anyone in Liverpool thought that either. So it may well be that he's what you suggest, he's landed in the perfect spot, the absolute perfect spot. You see, when you're a player of that ilk, you think, no, it's me. It's all me, actually. Yeah. I'm doing it all. And that's just the way they are. And you kind of understand it because a lot of it is them. But you put that brilliance somewhere else and it becomes really good as opposed to utter brilliance.
Yeah, there is a chemistry. I see he has posted a selfie, Mohamed Salah, of just him smiling and no words. Maybe that's his way of saying he's not unhappy at Liverpool. We shall see. He's 29 at the end of this season, so there's a now or never feel to that one. And before you go, the Arsenal thing's getting more serious all the time, you know. Everton beat them, 2-1? I mean, geez, the old adage in politics when you're explaining you're losing. So Mikel Arteta today, because they've got Carabao Cup this week. Last year, we won the game against Everton at the Emirates with a 25% chance of winning, and yet we won 3-2. Last weekend, we had a 67% chance of winning and a 9% chance of losing, and we lost. There was a 3% chance we'd lose against Burnley, and we lost. There was a 7% chance against Spurs, and we lost. So he's basing this on the XG and on various statistics. And I mean, I get it, anything. Oh, don't go down that route. I mean, that is just so open to ridicule. I'm thinking of Rafa and his facts. Like, that's the kind of thing that just is, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Even if it's what you're thinking behind the scenes to keep everyone calm.
That's fingernails on the edge of the cliff stuff.
Yeah.
You should not be doing that. That, by the way, oh, we had a 3% chance of losing, we lost. That's terrible news. That's not good. That's not something you should be telling everybody. They're hiding that under a big, big row of papers.
Yeah,
somewhere.
It's not a good thing, yeah.
No, and you're thinking, you try to sell yourself here? This is not how to do it. And you do feel really sorry for him because, you know, talking about that, you know, the fact that he's coming in and he's had to change a lot since he's come in. There was, you know, with Arsenal, it's massive changes behind the scenes and on the pitch as well. But you know, I keep on thinking, their best player is their left back. It's not a good time when your best player is your left back. I mean, Tierney has been... He looks like if every player had his commitment and his attitude, it'd be absolutely fine. But you look through the team and there's just nowhere near that quality all the way through the team. I suppose in the end, what's got them out of it in the past is their great goal scoring. And at the moment, those goal scorers aren't scoring the goals. It's not settled what the system is, and he looks uncomfortable knowing what the best part of it is. And as I say, you've got the best player Tierney, and what do? You play him as the left centre back half the time. You're thinking, well, you're just wasting the best part of your best player. So the decisions, I'm not saying they're easy for him just now, but I can see that this could go down because there's a number of players in that team that look as if they could lose confidence even more, you know, and you want in those situations the right type of players that are going to fight and battle and chase, all that sort of stuff, all the old cliches that you need when you're dragged down the bottom there. And then you look at it and you think, well, you've got one or two of those players, but if one of those players is Xhaka and he's going about kicking everybody, it's not the right way to do that. I would be concerned about them just now. Talking about all the different things that can happen in the league, and you know that you can go on a run, etc. They just look so far away from it just now. They can win games. They're capable of beating any team at all. Absolutely, but going on a run, they just look too flaky at the moment. And I would be slightly concerned if I was an Arsenal fan. I would be very concerned actually.
I mean, Everton are a perfectly good team at the moment. They're up to fourth, Arsenal in 15th. The thing that you, even just watching the highlights, I didn't see the game in full, but you just watched the game, and even under the, you used the word flaky there, so even under second half of Wenger's tenure, when the flakiness and the lack of resilience and defensive organisation, whatever other attribute you want to throw into the mix, was being exposed, they always had a technical edge on teams. It was the Wenger philosophy, and you watch even just the highlights. Like, these days, and Everton are just as technically proficient. All the players from around the world, all the money. It's not like Arsenal even have a technical edge on teams and they're just losing games because of a lack of resilience or whatever, again, you know, was the issue under the Wenger years. They're not even playing a football that's kind of anyway better than what Everton are putting together or any other Premier League team. It's just kind of so-so Premier League football these days.
Yeah, and that's why they look like a best mid-table team at the moment. Do you know what's interesting? I'm sure we've talked about it before. Is it true, I think it is, that Ancelotti and he actually came in at the same time? Was it the same week? Roughly. Because I remember at the time thinking, wait a minute, Everton are getting Ancelotti, who's won everything that he's won, who's got all the experience he's got. And there wasn't actually much of a fuss made. But Arsenal are getting Arteta, and this was dead exciting because he's a new exciting young
player. Almost the anniversary, by the way. Sorry, Ancelotti, this very day last year, it's his 1 year anniversary, Ancelotti, and I think Arteta came in on the 22nd. So basically to the day, this very day last year. So it was a perfect check-in, litmus test. Where are we a year on?
Exactly. And that's the point. I remember at the time thinking, and everybody was talking about Arteta and the excitement. Of course, yes, he'd worked under Pep and all that sort of stuff and Arsenal legend. And I'm saying, yeah, but you've got a rookie and you've got one of the best managers in the business here. Who's getting the good deal here? Who's getting the deal that I can, if it was my team, which Everton happened to be one of my teams, I was kind of delighted with that deal. And of course, Arteta, there were suggestions for a little while about Arteta and Everton as well. And I'm thinking, I think I'd like Carlo there. I kind of hope he isn't coming for a swan at the end of his career. But, if he isn't, it's Carlo Ancelotti. So one of those things, you've got to look at it and think, there was a style at the time. You know, Lamps had just come in. You look around and, you know, Pep looks young and certainly Jurgen looks quite young as well. And there's this style of a few young managers coming in, Southampton and young managers. And just sometimes you go through styles, but if you've got a choice between Carlo, you've got to go with Carlo before Miguel every single. You must. It's just it's an utter no-brainer. And if Carlo had the choice between Arsenal and Everton, and he wouldn't have went up to it now, but let's be fair, he almost certainly would have taken Arsenal, wouldn't he, at the time?
Oh yeah.
And that's it. That's beginning to look very much like an error, because he may well have steadied that ship. And look at how. You say technically they're good, but look at the balance of the Everton's team, the Everton squad, even missing a few now. And I think, by the way, I think Carlo, he got lucky recently. Right? When he fell in that system with the four centre-backs, right? He didn't plan that. That was because your full-backs were injured, Coleman's injured, you know, and Dina's injured. And you think, well, you go for the... And then it's worked against Chelsea specifically. And they've thought, hey, do not look a gift horse in the mouth. There's enough managers out there that they get lucky in those sort of situations and don't see the luck. He's seen it and he's stuck by it. And that's why he is the manager he is, because he sees it.
Very good. Well, listen, my man, another year done and dusted. Have a great Christmas and we will talk to each other, I suspect, in the new year.
Okay. Stay safe, everyone, and have a good Christmas and New Year.
Thanks very much. Pat Nevin there. Chelsea still 1-0 up on West Ham, 75 minutes in the clock.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Tammy Abraham has just put Chelsea 2-0 up against West Ham, 78 minutes gone when he scored that goal. So they are pretty much home and hosed, Chelsea. Thiago Silva with the first goal earlier today. Burnley 2-1 winners against Wolves. Really good win for Burnley. On the football show tomorrow evening, Philippe Auclair is going to join us, pick out his moments of 2020, footballing moments. He sent us on a list. There are some great bits and bobs in there. It'll be a review of the year type chat with Philippe. And Louise Quinn. Louise Quinn will join us. She has left Arsenal for Italy. We'll check in on how life is going over there. In the meantime, back to the weekend's action. Old Trafford, we had commentary yesterday. Nathan and Vinnie Perth had a wee chat afterwards.
So what an incredible game at Old Trafford. Manchester United 6-2 winners against Leeds United. Vinnie Perth was alongside me. One of the games of the season, Vinnie.
Yeah, it was really entertaining. Goals, chances, goalkeepers had to make big saves, and it could have been 10-7, 10-8 in the middle of it. And that's what we like to see as fans. As coaches, we'd question whether that was good enough or not. But really exciting game. And it's a good day for Manchester United. Some of the, like James coming on, done really well for them. And McTominay and Fred, people who aren't, you know, the big names of that squad have got a lot out today. And it's very positive for Solskjaer. And I think there is still questions about Manchester United, but they'd be very happy where they sit, win their game in hand or second. That's been a good start after 13, 14 games for them.
I think Manchester United supporters, if they miss the game, will be surprised to see six goals and none for Rashford or Martial. So what was the driving force for United? Was it that base of Fred and McTominay who do take a lot of stick at times?
Yeah, and I think for me, Bielsa is a god of coaching, and Pep always talks about, Pochettino talks about how good he is, but he's brought it, his lead side isn't world class yet, and he's brought it to Manchester United and been really open. And what Solskjaer done was tactically set up against Leeds are very strong in that midfield, and McTominay and Fred gave them a real base. And I'm sure some Manchester United fans weren't overly happy with the starting team when it was announced, but they gave them a real platform. Fred was excellent, and probably McTominay was man the match only because of his two goals. But himself and Fred were really good, and on the counter-attack, Leeds were so open, it actually suited Manchester United. And the pace of Rashford and Martial and James created so much space for Fernandes and the other two midfielders to really hurt them. And Manchester United just looked like they could score at will. And ultimately, they've scored six goals, which is a phenomenal return.
What is their best midfield? You mentioned Pogba's sitting on the bench today. He does seem to like to go with the two at the base. What is the? What do you think if they're playing Liverpool in a few weeks' time? You know, what's he going with for that game?
Yeah, I think if you're playing against Liverpool, maybe it is McTominay, Fred. But I think Pogba is world class. I really do. I think himself, McTominay and Fernandes, it is something that they should give a run of games to. And at different stages, Fred would be needed. But I think Pogba is world class. I think there's no doubt about it. Does he work as hard as Fred and McTominay? Possibly not. But when a team is playing well and they're in confidence, players will shine, and we've seen that today. So it's a difficult one. They've got to get that right. When they finished the season so well last year, it was Matic, Pogba and Fernandes. So I think McTominay, for me, is ready to become a star of Manchester United. He looks like he has leadership qualities. He looks like he's being brought up in the club, so he has that DNA of Manchester United running through him. He will come and go. He's still a young player and have good games and average at different stages. But for me, that's Manchester United's best, when you get the best out of Paul Pogba. We've seen that during the week. He was very good at times during the week. He's been rested or left out or rotated today. And even though it's a positive day for Manchester United, you do feel that they are probably rotating too much. And that way, players like Pogba and others aren't getting the rhythm in the team. And but for me, it's Pogba in midfield. And I understand he's got a lot of criticism, and rightly so, because of his agent and what he is. But from a talent point of view, if they can get the best out of him, that won't be an area they need to fix anytime soon.
I don't know if it says more about Manchester United or Leeds that even when it was 4-0, 4-1, you sort of felt that Leeds weren't out of it. And they created any amount of chances. David De Gea was brilliant at times, made some sensational saves, but they just kept on coming, Leeds. Does that raise questions about United defensively, or is that just actually that this Leeds side are always going to create chances?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It's the style Leeds have. It's the two number eights torn up here, there and everywhere, and they play this attacking brand of football, and it's such speed and possession is the way they play. So it's a bit of all of that, but at the same time, Shaw was steady as Lindelof was a little bit sloppy at times, but done quite well. Maguire made a couple of blocks. Wan-Bissaka, they got in behind him three or four times. So there, for me, there's still a concern. If United want to be thereabouts with City, with Liverpool in Champions League, guaranteed, without fighting for Champions League, just being a Champions League top two or three side, they need to bring in two world-class fullbacks. Completely need, that is probably the biggest area for them. Lindelof, yes, has been decent at times, and he's looked poor at times, but if you brought in two world-class fullbacks to that side, and with the attacking flair they have, then they won't be worried about defending too much, because they'll have that much of the ball and they'll be that dominant. So there's areas of improvement for Manchester United.
Can they win the league?
I don't think they can win the league. I think you can't give away the amount of chances they give, the goals they concede. They're nearly on par with someone like Newcastle, 22 goals conceded. It's too many. You can't win the league that way. I mean, albeit they're ahead of Man City in the league, but Man City look like Pep has had to go back to the basics a little bit, and he's fixed his back four, and they're keeping clean sheets. They're just not firing at the other end. But Manchester United look too open from a defensive point of view to win a league. It looks like the next couple of weeks is an opportunity for Liverpool to get away from everybody. But it is certainly a big battle for Champions League spots. And United look very strong in that position. And I think there are a couple of transfer windows away from winning the league. They're not there yet. They're certainly short of players. There's no doubt about it.
And what if you're a Leeds fan watching that after putting five past Newcastle? You expected it to be fun. You expected it to be entertaining. Is there still a lot of frustration when you're looking at just how open they are?
I suppose you've got to look at the glass half full if you're a Leeds fan. For so long, they struggled to get out of the Championship, and Bielsa got them out of the Championship. But you know the coach or the football person in you is looking at that Leeds team saying, don't be so open away in Old Trafford. But Bielsa will have none of that. He'll do it his way, and that's just the way it is. He just has one way of playing. He's got different variants of movements, but he's one way of playing, and it's speed, it's power, it's fullbacks not afraid to get on. One stage, Bamford picked up the ball, and there was six players ahead of him. That's just six players ahead of him. Problem with that is you're open for the counter-attack, and Manchester United are so strong at that. So for me, I think Bielsa is the right manager. He's someone who could take them back to a Champions League, but he's going to need 3, 4, 5 transfer windows. Bamford has scored 9 goals this year, but they need someone better to lead the line. The amount of chances Leeds create, if they had a world-class striker, I think they'd be certainly a lot higher up the table. I think they're second in chances created and shots in the Premiership. So it tells you they're doing the right things from an attacking point of view. They just need better players in those areas to implement Bielsa's style.
Great stuff, Finny. Enjoy the Christmas.
Cheers, thanks.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network.